The U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve has dipped below 300 million barrels for the first time in decades. Welcome to Debug the Hype. I'm Alex Morgan. This show curates stories from online communities and is not affiliated with Reddit or any subreddit. Today's date is August 16th, 2026. That SPR figure is where we start because it threads into two bigger stories about how Washington is reallocating scarce muscle, military fuel, and regulatory capacity, and why allies and markets are noticing. Poland's Prime Minister Donald Tusk announced during Armed Forces Day that Warsaw is building what he said will soon be the largest army in Europe, a claim backed by numbers that matter. Defense spending around 4.8% of GDP in 2026, procurement packages under the SAFE program worth roughly 100 million zlotys, and a target force expansion toward about 300,000 active troops plus big reserve numbers. And the practical upshot is that NATO's eastern flank is being materially reshaped, which strengthens deterrence for some and raises questions about costs, regional arms dynamics, and how this buildup will be integrated into alliance planning. A new Shinkansen-based train has just arrived in Taiwan. 144 cars under a contract worth about 124 billion yen, roughly $778 million. The first batch of modernized high-speed equipment since the system opened in 2007. After onboard testing, the trains could enter commercial service as early as next July. And beyond passenger comfort, this is a reminder that Japan-Taiwan industrial ties remain active and that infrastructure upgrades can quietly shift regional connectivity and economic patterns.
Start with what's changed. The U.S. temporarily left the Western Pacific without a forward-deployed aircraft carrier after the USS George Washington was ordered out to relieve the USS Abraham Lincoln in the Middle East, a choreography driven, according to reporting by the Associated Press, by an extended deployment tied to the administration's Iran policy and a concentration of forces in the Western Hemisphere. That move is concrete shorthand for a broader strategic squeeze. The U.S. operates 11 carriers, but normally keeps 2 to 3 in forward positions. And when you yank one away from the Indo-Pacific, you create maintenance bottlenecks, lengthen deployments for crews, and generate predictable political fallout among allies in Japan, the Philippines, and beyond, who view carriers as visible reassurance as much as weapons platforms. Sailors and officers describe real strain. An expert quoted that people don't get enough rest. It's psychologically exhausting. And military analysts point to the tactical trade-offs. Carriers bring flexible strike and command options, but are increasingly vulnerable to long-range missiles, drones, and anti-ship systems, which forces a debate inside the Pentagon about whether to preserve carrier presence, accelerate submarine and missile defenses, or rebalance towards smaller distributed platforms. But this is not an isolated logistic hiccup. It dovetails with a parallel reallocation of national resources. The Department of Energy and the White House have overseen large SPR releases, roughly 172 million barrels put onto markets to blunt supply shocks tied to the Iran war. And that action has pushed inventories below the historically sensitive 300 million barrel threshold that engineers say marks the edge of safe rapid drawdown.
The technical detail matters. The oil in the SPR is stored in salt caverns across 4 Gulf Coast sites, and repeated rapid withdrawals change the oil to water ratio and can physically reshape those caverns such that pumping rates slow and long-term integrity risks rise. As one former administration official bluntly told CNBC, don't believe the people out of the government that are saying the SPR can go to 70 million barrels. It's nonsense. And DOE spokespeople counter that the caverns are operational, but independent engineers and GAO audits flag that the practical operational floor is closer to 250 to 300 million barrels, and that refilling hundreds of millions of barrels would cost billions and take years. Put those two threads together and you get a consistent picture. This administration has prioritized an extended Iran campaign and a security focus on the Western Hemisphere, and the consequence is a stretch on hard power. Ships and pilots pushed longer, allies unsettled, and on soft power resources, such as the oil cushion that governments reach for during hurricanes or sudden global supply disruptions. For regional politics, the absence of a carrier in the Western Pacific hands Beijing a political opening. Chinese narratives about declining U.S. resolve can be amplified by a visible carrier gap, even if the U.S. retains overall naval superiority and capability. For NATO, Allied air policing, like the Spanish F-18 interceptions in Europe, shows how partners are picking up some of the operational slack, but that only works when allies feel the burden is shared, not shifted unevenly.
Reddit threads reflected the split you'd expect. Some listeners were furious about perceived misprioritization and the optics of ceding presence in Asia. Others argued carriers are a decades-old solution to modern problems, and that the Navy should be adapting. The practical takeaway is that allies and markets are already pricing in the trade-offs, and policy choices about where to plant aircraft carriers and how fast to refill the SPR will have cascading diplomatic and economic effects.
Now shift to a related but distinct institutional squeeze on the financial side. The Office of the Comptroller of the Currency has granted conditional preliminary approval to a national trust charter for World Liberty Trust Company, the crypto firm aligned with the Trump family, a decision that would allow the company to directly issue and custody its USD1 stablecoin instead of outsourcing those functions. Those are precise capabilities, custody and issuance, and the stakes are quantifiable. USD1 has a market value of roughly $4 billion, and the firm reportedly generated about $50 million in revenue for Trump-linked entities through June. Critics also point to a complex ownership web that includes an alleged 49% stake connected to Sheikh Tayyun of the UAE and roughly $187 million that flowed to Trump-linked entities, details that have fueled questions about conflicts of interest and political optics around a regulator whose chief, Jonathan Gould, was appointed by the president. The OCC insists the review was performed by career staff and that conditional approval is consistent with statutory duties, and the charter itself is limited. It would not permit traditional deposit taking or lending, but Senator Elizabeth Warren called the move the most brazen act of self-dealing our financial system has ever seen, and is pushing legislation to bar senior officials from owning chartered banks, an escalation that puts Congress on a potential collision course with the regulator.
From a technical and market perspective, folding a sizable stablecoin issuer into a federal trust charter would be consequential. It promises clearer infrastructure for custody, more direct access to banking rails, and potentially faster payment flows for a product that already touches billions, while also normalizing the idea that crypto issuance sits inside federal regulatory structures rather than a patchwork of state rules and private custodians. Reddit reactions in the economics subreddit and adjacent communities captured that duality. Some users warned of regulatory capture and the political benefits accruing to a president's family. Others argued that integrating stablecoins into the banking umbrella could reduce counterparty risk and improve consumer protections. And the real policy question for markets and legislators is whether central oversight will tame crypto's volatility or simply socialize the upside while privatizing the political payoff. Seen together with the carrier and SPR moves, the charter decision fits a broader pattern worth watching. Authority and resources are being concentrated, and critics say the political alignment of regulatory appointments makes those concentrations look transactional rather than technocratic, which raises a second-order risk: erosion of institutionally based trust at the moment the world needs reliable partners to manage shocks, from naval crises to energy disruptions to digital payment runs. If you want the short analytical thread across both deep stories, here it is. Strategic choices that pull scarce capacity toward one theater or priority have measurable, sometimes durable, costs elsewhere. And when those choices are paired with politically sensitive regulatory decisions, allies and markets adjust their expectations in ways that amplify uncertainty and risk.
Which partners, markets, and infrastructure will be forced to absorb those costs if Washington keeps prioritizing near-term campaigns over distributed readiness and long-term buffers? I'm Alex Morgan from Debug the Hype.